The events in this tale occurred very close to the turn of the century when some early celebrants were popping rockets and raining sparks on Bayou Teche, although the tree frogs paid them no mind and droned with such volume the night air seemed to have a voice of its own. Who would have thought such complexity would fall upon us? As usual, the Acadian Saturnalia was a grand and innocent mix of paganism and Christianity. The breeze balmy, smelling of fish roe, more like spring than winter, more like a fecund and pastoral piece of Eden that had drifted loose from the South Seas. But for me, lying on top of my bed in my shotgun house that creaked with loneliness, listening to the long-dead voice of Jimmy Rogers yodeling in the dark, I wondered about the plantation world in which I was born and the one in which I now lived. Sometimes I felt the year was 1861, although my Acadian family certainly did not descend from the agrarian aristocracy that readers of Gone with the Wind would associate with the historical South. Both my parents were illiterate, although my mother wanted terribly to learn. Education of any kind was a luxury in the world in which she lived. She worked in a laundry for 20 cents an hour, alongside black women who spoke no English at all. My father's world was certainly more lucrative but more severe in its own fashion. He racked pipe on the monkey board of an offshore drilling rig and thought his drinking and womanizing and carefree ways under the stars would never end until the drill punched into an early pay sand and blew oil and gas and half the Gulf of Mexico through the rig, the floor spikes popping like corks, pipe clanging and bouncing in the network of steel stanchions. My father hooked his safety belt on the Geronimo wire and leaped into the darkness just as the wellhead exploded, sending a ball of flame into the heavens and taking my father down to the bottom of the gulf, the heat boiling the surface, the bodies of the dead bobbing in the waves, their faces burned off, the unlit oil as black and shiny as paint rolling in the waves. Those were the kinds of images floating through my mind while Jimmy Rogers sang, maybe because he was tubercular and doomed to an early death. Maybe that was the true South, the best of it strewn across a cornfield at Dunker's Church or littered in front of the cannon on Cemetery Ridge, the worst of it in the Cockney's whip whistling across a black man's back. When I was growing up, the people in the Victorian and antebellum homes along East Main Street in New Iberia were never hurtful toward me, although my class of people would often be asked to go to the back door. To me, however, they seemed kind. They were not profane, nor harsh, nor curt, and were called genteel. I wasn't sure what the word meant, but it was obviously associated with the way they did things. If a difficult situation came about, such as an argument over money or a disrespectful remark from a person of humble origins, a lawman or landlord or an employer would appear and the situation would be settled. It took me a while to understand what those gestures indicated. It might not be 1861 to others, but in our world, the calendar meant nothing. And the mention of a surname could freeze the sweat on a black man's face or leave a white field worker unemployed and not certain his family would eat that night. Serenity along Bayou Teche sometimes was acquired at a heavy price. From its inception, Louisiana has been a home for pirates, brothels, gambling halls, corrupt politicians, legal and illegal slavery, and terrorism. The torch and the whip. The slave insurrection of 1811 in Orleans Parish was the most brutal atrocity in the history of our country. To this day, it is hard to believe it happened. I won't even describe it here. Later on, the White League made General Forrest's Ku Klux Klan look silly when they invaded New Orleans and shot former Confederate General James Longstreet and struck a deal with the Republicans to shut down Reconstruction. Angola Plantation on the Mississippi River became one of the first rental prisons in that nation. It was called Angola Prison, or Angola Pen, or the farm, but hell would have been a more accurate title. Even today, no one knows how many of Angola's convicts died of disease or gunshots or beatings or starvation or the sweat boxes on Camp A. Their bodies are still in the levee along the river, the bones and teeth broken into chips. For many years, the farm's electric chair was kept in the Red Hat House. A black convict I knew by the name of Guitar Get It and Go Welch wrote a song about it, and here's what he had to say. How come they electrocute a man 12 o'clock at night? The current much stronger. The people's turn out all the light.